Your face. You love it, you hate it, it's yours. And in the mirror every day, you can see your flaws, your extraordinary advantages there around the eyes, that fine chin.
Smiling faces, smiling faces. Sometimes they don't tell the truth.
What you don't see when you look in the mirror every day is a list of your traffic violations, how many unpaid bills you have, the people you've recently emailed, your medical records, and that fuzzy surveillance video of just how crazy you got at the basketball game on your birthday some years back. I'd love to forget about that one, huh? But that's exactly what law enforcement is starting to be able to see with just a few keystrokes, a few massive databases, and software that can recognize faces as well as a mom can pick her own child out of a lineup. The state of Ohio does it on a limited basis, according to a newspaper investigation. And Ohio's Attorney General Mike DeWine told us yesterday, it's not just a Buckeye thing.
As your listeners across the country listen to this, the odds are their state does exactly what we are doing.
26 other states use facial recognition technology in law enforcement. It's a technology that is emerging as a powerful new real-time tool for investigators. What's the law say here, though? Is it possible that walking by an ATM camera could become an illegal search by the government? Well, whenever we get nervous about the law, we often turn to Jeffrey Rosen, president of the National Constitution Center and professor at George Washington University Law School. Professor Rosen, welcome.
Great to be here.
So how worried should I be about the legal implications of my face dragging with me all of my personal data all the time, essentially wherever there's a computer?
Well, I think you should be pretty worried. On the one hand, what Ohio's doing right now may not violate the law. If all they're doing is taking mugshots, plugging it into a database of 20 million people, and figuring out the 12 most likely suspects, you might say that's no different than taking DNA samples that have been abandoned and putting them in public databases and figuring someone out. But what's scary about this is it raises the possibility of ubiquitous surveillance 24/7 in public. So using this technology, the police could take a picture of anyone in front of a protest scene using a cell phone, plug the image into a database, match that with the license plate recognition technology that allows us to track every location of a car in a city 24/7 and basically follow someone's movements 24/7 for a month without a warrant.
All right, I want to sort of sketch out the possibility of a challenge here if, in fact, lawyers are going to turn this gray area into something a little more clear. It's recognized, I believe, in common law that a spouse, say, has a special expertise regarding his or her mate, you know, in terms of who they are, their character, that sort of thing, right?
That's right.
Okay, so your wife could identify you, you know, maybe more easily than any other person on the planet, right?
I certainly hope so, especially on a good day.
Exactly. All right, so if a computer technology is developed that can actually duplicate the level of clarity about who you are, where you are, oh, that's my husband, da-da-da-da-da, is there any way in which the government having that technology can be challenged because it interferes with this sense that the people who are closest to us have a sense of understanding of who we are that's private?
Yes, there is a way that it could be challenged because there's a big difference between my wife and the faceless government that's picking me out of a crowd without individualized suspicion. The objection here is not the accuracy of the technology, although it is far from 100% accurate even now. The question is whether the government should need to have reason to suspect someone before identifying them. And even more so, even if they do have reason to suspect someone, should they be able to follow all of our movements? It's the quantity of information, not the identification itself, that's identified. This is exactly what came up in the DNA case, where a majority of the court upheld the DNA tracking of arrestees. And Justice Scalia said the question isn't whether it's accurate. It might well be accurate. The fact is that the framers of the Constitution generally required warrants before you were allowed to search someone's very private information.
All right, next thought experiment. We've all seen the scene in the movie where the private investigator calls up his pal on the police force and says, run this license plate for me, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the possibility that this data would be out there and available to all kinds of people in a relatively unmanageable way, That's a fear. Mike DeWine, the Attorney General of Ohio, said, oh, we have laws against that. If you get caught doing that, it's a felony in the state of Ohio. Is that enough of a protection for keeping this data from basically seeping into every aspect of our lives?
No, it's not. Our driver protection laws are so sectoral. So the DMV will break the law if they release my address to marketers, but they won't break the law if they use my face to follow all of my movements in public, which is not an adequate protection for privacy. There's also a big difference between the way the public and private sector treats this. If a friend or an enemy of mine were to go out and see me in front of a bar, or let's say they didn't know who I was, just go outside of a bar, snap a picture of me, plug my picture into Facebook, and using facial recognition technology, identify me and post that on her blog, that would be okay in America, but that would not be okay in Europe, where it would violate data privacy laws that say people have a right to their image.
So there's a gray area in terms of the government being involved. There's a gray area in terms of private use of this data. I'm wondering if this technology, the way that it's developing, and facial recognition being kind of sort of the lead here, that we're eventually going to get to the point where the whole concept of a warrant is moot, that it just won't exist anymore.
I think this is the central legal question, and it leads to the broader question, do we have any expectation of anonymity in public? And I think the framers of the Constitution had a clear answer to that question. As Justice Scalia said in his great dissent, anonymity in public was the center of what the Fourth Amendment meant to protect. They wanted to protect dissidents who criticized King George from being identified without warrants. Although identification of individual suspects may be okay, what makes this a gray area is once that leads to the tracking and ubiquitous surveillance of suspects without a warrant, that violates the right to anonymity that I think the framers would have insisted on.
Well, I won't ask you whether this is going to be a boom for plastic surgeons altering people's faces. Jeffrey Rosen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Rosen is president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor at George Washington University Law School.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio. The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.